Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back. Another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. Now, for those of you that listen a lot, you know that I'm fascinated with creativity and innovation, especially the on-off switch that some people have. And that's what we're going to talk about today. It's very difficult to just suddenly be creative. Telling a creative person to, quote, be creative is like walking up to a comedian and saying, say something funny. It's not as easy as it sounds. Now, before we get too far into this, I do want to let you know that today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Tesseract Ventures. Tesseract Ventures helps companies become smarter, better connected, and more efficient through next generation robotics, 21st century software, and radically connected platforms. You can visit tesseractventures.io to learn more, or scroll down and click the link in the show notes. Now, as promised, I've got a subject matter expert with me today. Joining us is Nir Bashan. Nir is the CEO and founder of the Creator Mindset Consulting. He's got a great new book that just came out, and I'm going to give him a chance to tell us all about that. Joining us from Orlando, Florida, welcome to Startup Hustle, Nir.
Thank you, sir. Good to be here.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to talk about this. This is, as I mentioned before we hit record, this is a subject I've been fascinated with for a while. But before we get too far into that, let's get a little bit about your backstory.
Yeah, sure, man. So I've been a serial entrepreneur my whole life. I started my first business when I was 9 years old in Los Angeles. Not to date myself, but, you know, it was the mid-'80s. And people would go and buy like a shiny brand new Pontiac 6000, you know, and they were like, yeah, best car ever, you know, Pontiac. And I would go door to door asking them to wash it, you know, go door to door. And people would be like, no way, I just spent, you know, $8,900 on that brand new Pontiac. There's no way I'm giving, you know, some punk kid the keys. And so I learned at my first ever enterprise that I needed to be creative in order to do well. And so we ended up, you know, offering people other things, like I'd wash trash cans and I would help people do, you know, clean up and do all these other things. And, you know, fast forward to today, you know, I've run many companies and I've owned my own, and it's amazing how much I've learned going door to door washing cards that still applies today, right? I've signed countless, just like you have, Matt, man, you've signed countless master services agreements, right? Countless statements of work. And yet, you know, what a client ends up wanting, you need to be a little bit more creative than what kind of in the letter of the offering. And for me, that was born at a young age and has carried with me throughout my entire life. I am always looking for people that are doing well. Those people generally are creative, and people who don't do well generally are not. So I've dedicated my life to becoming more creative in everything that I do.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the book that you just published. It's called The Creator Mindset, which we're stealing the title of for today's episode. And I'd like to just hear more about what that means to you and what the book is about.
Yeah, so the book is about how to be more creative at work. I, Matt, am a serial entrepreneur, right? So about 6-7 years ago, I looked at the market and there was zero books on the how of creativity. Everything was on the why. Why should you be creative? Oh, it's great. Why? You know, and I read every book on the in the marketplace, and every book was like super exciting, but then it got to the end and I couldn't have any action items. I couldn't start doing. And so I pitched this idea around. We got four different major publishers in the US that were like, yes, this is the right time for a how book. And so it's 92 tools to unlock the secret to innovation, growth, and sustainability. It's only been out 2 weeks now, and the feedback so far has been amazing. Everyone from Bill Taylor, who is the founder of Fast Company, loves the book. General Stanley McChrystal gave me a really nice endorsement. And so it's basically a guide to how to make creativity happen. And I have some controversial thoughts about creativity that are in the book that have, I think, pushed some readers outside their comfort zone. But that's a good thing, because I believe that creativity comes from moments where you're not comfortable.
I couldn't agree with that last statement more. I mean, I think that it's well, discomfort in general causes a lot of innovation. I mean, that's pretty much the definition. I mean, it's a synonym of disruption. Now, as far as creativity, now, so much about everything shifted to why. Everyone wanted the why of everything. And a lot of stuff it stayed away from how. And how didn't, you know, how was sexy for a while, and then why took over. And, you know, but the thing is you still have to have a strong grasp on the how side of things. And, you know, it's easy to say, yes, you need to be more creative, you need to be more agile, but it is completely lacking creativity to not tell you how. And, right. And so I appreciate your approach with that. And, you know, you know, I want to talk about the controversial things more than anything else. You really
my right there,
but that sounds like the most fun thing we can talk about.
Let's dive in, man.
What I'd like to ask you is, did you find, so, you know, I've written three books myself, and the best part about writing a book is definitely finishing it, says everyone. But with that, you usually unlock a few different things, and you find out some stuff about yourself and about different people. And writing a book is an interesting research project. Starting from the basic fundamentals related to creativity, did you discover anything related to why people generally aren't creative?
Yeah, totally. And I agree with you, Matt. Like, you know, writing a book is like owning a boat, right? It's the first day that you get it, and then the day that you sell it are your two favorite days of boat ownership. That's exactly what,
that's,
you know, writing. So I found that, here's the thing, right? I traced it back, and we did extensive research on the book. It turned out that 50, 60, 70,000 years ago, we were, you know, early man lived to like 22. I mean, seriously, man, we were just decimated by, you know, the climate, by beasts that were way more powerful than we were. And so, you know, what ends up happening is when you're living, you know, 20 years tops, you get into routines of comfort. That comfort breeds predictability, and that predictability makes it ensures that you'll live. Okay. And so here we are today with a very similar mindset and a very similar construct. And yet, you know, we get an email that we don't want to answer. We get this like pain and we're like, ugh. And that same pain, that same trigger of hormone or, you know, that sort of feeling that we get is the same thing that, you know, we had 50,000 years ago that triggered us, that said, oh, you know, if you open this email and you respond to this person, you know, you're going to die. And so today we still have those triggers that protect us from staying alive and protect us from dying. And those are the things that we today carry with us in everything we do. So we're afraid to take risks. And because we're afraid to take risks, we don't get creative about on anything. I talk to countless businesses across the U.S. I work with, you know, everyone from AT&T to JetBlue, Microsoft, different, you know, Fortune 100, 500. And I work with, you know, small companies too. And I find consistently over and over that people are too afraid of being creative because they figure that what worked yesterday will work tomorrow and that will continue on forever. But a lot of people got their world super rocked, man, when COVID hit. And so I argue that if you're not consistently creative, you're going to get left behind in the dustbin of history.
So one of the, and I agree with you, and I think that that fear of failure and, you know, and creativity, if you are truly being creative and not just repetitive, meaning just not, you're not just mimicking what someone else did, you usually subject yourself to a little bit of commentary from peers, the industry. I mean, there's a lot of different stuff. And I think that that fear of failure is what you were just describing. So yeah, I can buy into that. I think another thing is well, you know, creativity in general is something that some people are wired a little. They have a few more wires running into that part of the brain. I think it comes with certain personality styles a lot more than others, which is fine. And you know, it, now the real question is if you're someone that has an ability to do that. Now, have you always considered yourself to be creative?
I have, you know, and I sort of wondered why, but here's, you want to start stepping into the controversial parts?
Yeah, should we go yeah, there? Sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
so here's a controversial thing, that I say, I think, and I've proven it as best as I could, that everyone is born creative, no matter who you are, no matter whether you think you're creative or you don't think you're creative, or you think that, you know, you're like a superstar of innovation, or you're the last thing from it. Every single human being on Earth was born creative. And somewhere along the way, education, schooling, the military, you know, grad school, heaven forbid business school, has kind of taken you off that path of using creativity to solve problems and has forced you into analytics. That's something that I say that gets people a little bit uncomfortable because they tell me, Nir, I don't play an instrument. I don't know how to play the trumpet. I'm not creative. But it turns out that, controversial point number two, that art, music and all that stuff is but 1% of the entirety of the creative spectrum. It is just a little portion of it. Yet most of us are introduced to creativity through art, right? We that's how we feel creativity or whatnot. Yet yet it's tragically a very, very small portion of our entire creative potential.
So
how about that, man? Two of them. Boom, right
well,
there.
I mean, I don't think that's highly controversial though. And now I can see why some people would feel that way. I mean,
it makes people uncomfortable.
Yeah, I can see that. And I think that the analytics side, I could see that in business because, you know, so much of what we're trained to do often in school is related to just baseline. What are your KPIs? X over Y. You know, and like God forbid you say Y over Z,
right?
You know,
and
different stuff. Now, I mean, creativity comes in a bunch of different forms, and so much in the tech industry, you know, you have buzzwords like agile, and an agile approach is a creative approach. That means we're not just taking a blueprint and building it centimeter by centimeter, and that means that we're going to adapt and we're going to change, and that on some levels is creativity. To some people, when they hear creativity, they think like painting. Like I own a significant number of original paintings by an artist named Nate Trotter, who literally replicates in like a high definition format with acrylic paint the same thing he'll see on a photograph. Now, The question is that creative or is that just replication? Now, I can't do it. I couldn't even come close. Like, it's shocking. So, you know, and so there's something that connects between his head and his hand that allows him to do that.
Yes.
But you have to see things differently. It's the same thing with someone that writes code and innovates something. And, you know, like, here's another thing too. It's like a lot of people want to get into the AI, the machine learning. You know, you have things like chatbots and stuff like that. You have to have a level of creativity just to do some of that, because nothing will stump you more than say, oh, well, what would our response to that be? And you're like, huh, I don't know. What would a person say? You know, and so there's, you know, the creative side. Now, I think that so one of the things that I found, and I mentioned earlier, connection with the music industry. Now, you know, I worked for a musical instrument manufacturer for 8 years, and I also worked in the live event ticketing industry for a similar amount of time. And my relationship, I got to know people in the music industry. So I started asking, like, literally like rock stars, you know, how do you do it? Like, what makes you turn it on? And one of the things that was a bit of a recurring theme was they never let themselves get so far away from that creative place mentally.
Yeah.
That they were far away from it when they needed to get back into it. And you see these guys, if you're around, and most people don't see this because you don't go into the show until it's about to start and everything like that.
Right.
But
right.
You'll see that during the day, a lot of these, the people, the performers, they're not doing a lot of things. Like, they're not carrying in gear. They're not setting it up. And you see a lot of times it looks like they're practicing. So I've asked, I'm like, well, are you practicing? They're like, no, I'm just trying to not be so far away from where I need to be when the spotlight shines on me. So
yeah.
I think that what you said with the training and the upbringing and creativity is that we don't push people into that space and we don't keep them near it enough that when you need to access it, if you're not doing creative shit all day, and then all of a sudden you're like, you have to walk in the other room. And it's like I said at the beginning of the show, it's like, do something creative. You know, it's like mindset has. Well, that's a funny thing. I've actually talked to like touring comedians. I'm like, what's the most annoying thing? And they're like, people walk up to me all the time and they're like, say something funny. I'm like, yeah. Yeah. So, but it's the same thing. So do you think that keeping yourself, are there drills? Is there training? Like,
yes,
how, like,
yes,
what's the how?
Yes.
Like, it's
yes.
Okay,
so yes on
let's
everything.
Let's talk about that a little bit. So my research with the musicians is running parallel with some of the stuff in your book then.
Oh, no doubt.
Meaning like, okay, well, let's talk about
no
that.
No doubt.
Little bit,
I think
that's an important thing.
Totally, man. Yeah, I'm with you. I worked in music too. I worked with hip hop artists, a lot of hip hop artists. I worked with Rod Stewart. I worked with KRS-One. I was in LA for 38 years. I worked in Hollywood, and I noticed that
Rod Stewart is my favorite hip hop artist.
Yeah, he's a good. He's got some good rhymes. and so I discovered that. You know, and I work with other people too, you know, the one hit wonders and stuff like that. And I noticed that there's two kinds of people, right? One, they're the people that exactly what you're talking about, they have a process, they have a predictable way to get creativity going. And the other people are on drugs or alcohol, and that's their way to get creativity going. And so you don't need to be on drugs and alcohol to be creative. You just need a routine and a process. I talk in the book about my routine and my process, and then I've honed over 20 plus years. And it basically to break down what you are doing into three categories, right? The first is the conceptual level of your product or service. The second is the idea, which is like the middle level. And finally, I have the execution, which is the exact product or service that your career or your business provides. And I give people pens and I give people a sheet of paper. Listen, my stuff is about doing. If you want philosophy or whatever, I'm not your guy. If you want to learn how to be creative and to do it, then I am your person, right? So I give people a sheet of paper and I tell them, you know, start writing, and we start to write the concept of the business, and we start to then write the idea, and then we then write the execution. And most people have never thought of their business unless they're maybe doing a 3 or 5 year projection in anything other than the executionary part of their business. It's amazing, Matt. Like, most people only stay at the atomic level where they see a bunch of atoms, but they can't see what those atoms make up. So I have kind of a popular example that I use with a pizzeria, right? So the execution of the pizzeria is the meat lovers, cheesy crust, double stuffed medium with, a thin crust kind of thing. And that's the execution. And most people tell me, "Nir, I'm totally creative." I said, "Okay, cool. What do you got?" And they're like, "We're going to put sausage on that pizza." Huh? And I'm like, "Yeah, that's another execution of that particular execution. Let's go up a level and see." And they're like, "Why would we do that? We'd never go up a level." I'm like, "Let's go up a level and start to think creatively." And I literally help people understand that, you know, instead of pizza, maybe we should start looking at, you know, something different. Maybe it's a calzone. Maybe it's a different approach to Italian food. Maybe it's fresh Italian. Maybe it's, you know, not using preservatives." And they go, "Oh, interesting. So if I not use preservatives, that's the idea, right?" I say, yeah. And I'm like, "What execution can you come up with?" Well, they're like, "Well, maybe like a healthier alternative to pizza or something like that." I'm like, "Boom, that's creativity." And then I've worked with businesses all the way up to the concept level where they change really their identity of who they are and are able to fit the system into execution, which gives them, you know, totally different products and services. So listen, creativity can be taught, it can be learned, and it can be predictably repeated, turned on, like you said, Matt, whenever you want it. You just need the basic tools of how to do it. And I'm shocked, dude, I am shocked that nobody did this before. I'm shocked that I'm the first guy to write this down in a book. It's shocking to me because it's so valuable and because it's so easy to do. And every tool is free. It's just mindset shift. It's just perspective shift, looking at things a bit differently, a bit with fresh and new eyes. And for me, that is exciting. It's my life's work. And I really, really get excited when people start to think differently about their product or service.
You know, and we were, and I want to get into more of the 92 things that are in your book, but I also want to thank our production staff for correctly aligning sponsors with our episodes. Because once again, today's episode is brought to you by Tesseract Ventures. If you believe there's nothing more human than technology, go check out what the inventors, engineers, and creatives are building over at TesseractVentures.io. From robots to flexible tech solutions for construction and beyond, the Tesseract team dreams it and makes it come to life. It was a very, very timely and appropriate placement of our episode sponsors. And, you know, that is an interesting company because it is built all around creativity. They cool. have different labs and things that they focus on, and they make everything from toys to robots. And it's really cool. I'm a big fan of what they do. And you know, you talk about that. I've gotten to know their founder quite well, and we have conversations about creativity and what it takes to innovate. And, you know, sometimes it's well, for those that have, in my opinion, for me personally, I get so many ideas that run through my head. I got to figure out a way to filter out like 99 out of 100, sometimes just to keep my own sanity, because it starts rattling around in your head. It's kind of like having a bunch of marbles in a dryer or something. And, you know, so you're trying to get those out. How do you feel about, like, what are your thoughts on that filter? Like, cause like I said, with creative people, you often have so many things going on and so much stuff comes up. How do you latch on to what's worth continuing to be creative with and what isn't?
So it's a really good question, right? You're on, you know, more on the creative side of that split of that spectrum. And that's a wonderful thing. I advocate for people not to be too creative and not to be too analytical. I feel that the human mind is best in balance in the center, right? You and I both have that friend who's brilliant, like super creative, and he's still living in the basement with mom and dad. I'm sure your listeners can agree. And then we all have that friend who's super analytical and couldn't come up with an idea to save his or her life, right? So I don't want people to be on the extremes. I want people to grab the best from the analytics, grab the best from the creative, and come to the middle. Matt, I did a keynote for realtors, and I had a lady run up to me afterward. This is February now, right before COVID hit. And she was a realtor, right? And she's like, Nir, you know, I got a million ideas. Ideas are not my problem. I said, okay, tell me about them. She's like, no problem. So this is what I do. It's crazy. I'm number three in my region, number five and blah, blah, blah. I'm the second best closer in all of the state of, you know, Georgia or whatever. And blah, blah, blah. I said, okay, cool, cool. What are the ideas? Tell me the idea. She's like, okay, so on the listing, instead of staging, I do this, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, cool. What else? She's like, okay, so instead of doing this on the listing, I change it to blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay, what else? On the listing, on the listing, on the listing. Every idea, Matt, was not a fresh new idea. Again, it was a different, slightly different execution. It was just a slightly different execution and not an original enough idea or, you know, a high level enough idea to be worthwhile to chase. So for you and for people that are super brilliant, very, very successful. I've done a bit of research on the company and very, very impressed with everything that you've done with the books. You know, I would advise that you start to look at those ideas and say to yourself, are these really new and fresh and different concepts and ideas, or are they simply just a bunch of executions that I have that are maybe getting a slightly different flavor? Now, there is a time and a place for flavoring those types of executions. I mean, that is one of the most brilliant things that you can do creatively. But if you literally have 100 marbles in your head and you're trying to quiet down 99 of them so that you can pick the one winner out, I would advise you, Matt, that you start to look at it in a higher level picture and start to understand that the execution might not be high level enough to be guided by the idea. And if the idea is able to be realized, then it will give you manifestations of execution that are completely different.
Yeah. And, you know, you talk about that. So ideas are cheap. Execution is expensive and valuable.
Yeah.
And, you know, we sometimes have joked, because in the past, you know, FullScale grew for us so quickly. I mean, a couple hundred employees 2 years later, and we're sitting there going, man, on some days we have A+ ideas and C- execution. And, you know, the greatest idea and the most creative anything isn't worth its weight in anything if you can't get it to market, if you can't do anything with it. Now, that's not actually, I'm gonna strike that from the record, because it's not completely true. Like, you can be really creative, you can make a really awesome painting and you can hang it on your wall, and your reward might be your enjoyment of what you've created for as long as you enjoy it or give it away to someone.
Totally.
So like I said, I'm gonna strike that part from my record. Now, when it comes to business though, It's not how it works. And it was funny, because I was actually talking to Lauren Conaway, one of our other hosts on Startup Hustle.
Yeah.
And we were just kind of joking about awards and recognition. And I said, you know, the thing with winning awards for whatever it is that you're doing is trying to fit those things in that tube at the drive up teller at the bank. They're so hard to get in there and deposit into your bank account. And I was, you know, it's just a joke, because who gives a shit if you win an award? Like, it's okay. But yeah, that's like the, you know, and that's a funny thing. Cause you know, I'm 45 years old. I don't give a shit. Give me your fucking award or don't. Like, it doesn't have any bearing on my business, on my ego. It's not why I wake up in the morning, but some
right.
people, you know, when they, and where am I going with this? Okay. So that recognition is often the validation or the ranking that some people need to feel that they were creative or they were innovative. And, you know, like you mentioned, the realtors, like, I'm number five, I'm number three, I'm number two. I'm like, who cares?
Yeah, they're into it.
Yeah, it does. But that's the thing is I don't think that the people, okay, the people that I know that are the most creative, they do not give a shit about any of that. Like, they don't care. They just want you to leave them alone. Like, they don't want to go, they don't want to go receive the award because it takes them away from whatever they're doing. And so, and I want to encourage not only you, Nir, but anyone else listening to come join us on the Startup Hustle chat and on the Facebook group that we have. We just woke that thing back up recently and got over a thousand people in it in like 3 days. And we were having a discussion there last night about what's the difference between genius and crazy. And that's an interesting dichotomy between the two, because it's all about external perception. Like, and I've been asking people that question for a couple years, and the best answer I've received is who cares? And it was given in the context of like, who cares? Because if you spend time worrying about it's all out external perception, it's all the way that people are viewing things. And if you're spending time focusing on that, then you are distracting yourself from whatever it is you're trying to be a genius at. And so, that, I will ask you the question, what do you think the difference between genius and crazy is?
You know, it's an interesting question. I think that, you know, here's what I think. I think that you have to really be honest to who you are, and that your product or your service, your business will follow therein. I think that far too many people are so busy chasing that like glorious, you know, thing that they're going for. I'm a genius. I want to hit, you know, this glorious thing. But what they're doing is they're ignoring all the little things along the way that point them where they need to go. Right. And so you get kind of crazy trying to get to that path. And, you know, what's the difference between somebody who's crazy and who is a genius? So I think it's the way that you look at your goals. And if you're looking at goals in increments and what I call little victories in the book, which is a way to see little victories come together to point you in the right direction. Like I said, Matt, when I wash cars, right, I thought, dude, that is my business. I got a bucket. I was nine. I got soap. That's it. I'm in, dude. I got, you know, inventory and ready to go. And I didn't wash any cars.
Got $11 and I'm rich.
Yeah, buddy. My point is that I feel that far too many businesses, entrepreneurs, business owners even, are so busy focusing on that genius pie in the sky goal that they forget that what really builds your business is those little victories along the way. And I'll tell you a story. There was an ice cream salesman a few years ago who wanted to sell a crap load of ice cream machines. And that was his goal. It's an analytical goal, right? Volume. Volume was his goal. And so, you know, he went and didn't do so well, didn't sell a lot of machines. But he noticed there was a restaurant in LA or outside of LA that ordered a few machines because they kept breaking. They were making a lot of milkshakes and stuff. So on a whim, he decided to go down and check out the restaurant, stood in line, the line was out the door, and he ate the best cheeseburger he's ever had. All right. The guy's name was Ray Kroc, and the restaurant was McDonald's. Now, had he have just stayed on that genius, oh, I'm a genius. I'm a genius at selling ice cream machines. Well, says who, man? You know? And if he would have stayed there at that sort of level, we would have never had McDonald's today, right? He allowed those little victories to guide him in the way that they need to go, Matt. And I think that your listeners and more people in business today need to start to listen to what those little goals are telling them and start to develop them along the way to a path of success. I think that's really the difference between somebody who's a genius and somebody who goes crazy while they're trying to pursue their goals.
Yeah, you know, in my book, Balance Me, I talked about that same approach. You know, oftentimes people set goals and they view the goal as one singular action. Like, and I'll just use a real life goal. As I talk to a lot of people, like, what's your goal or what have been some of your goals? Buying a house is a big one for just people in life.
Yeah.
So they'll say, my goal is to buy a house. Well, here's the thing is anybody that's bought a house realizes that that is like a whole bunch of little actions that stack up to that final result.
Yeah, mini goals.
Much like you talked about with that, you talk about with the approach to creativity and these little victories. You know, you need to be detailed in your approach to getting that stuff done. And in that same, and then, you know, so then I would ask people, I said, well, what's preventing you from getting your achieving your goals? And they overwhelmingly said, well, I don't have time. I don't have time to do this. I don't have time to do that. And I realized that it wasn't that they didn't have time. It's just that we were choosing to use our time inefficiently or investing, like spending time chasing low value activities. Now, you know, I'll give you an example. My wife wants to learn how to speak French. So she got the Duolingo app on her phone and has been messing with that thing for 15 to 30 minutes a day for a couple of weeks. And she was speaking French to me last night. And
wow.
I was like, oh my God, you know, but the point is like the same thing with the language. You're like, hey, I want to learn to speak French. You don't just wake up and speak French. Like
right.
You got to do a whole bunch of different things. You got to
right.
eat the elephant one bite at a time.
That's
they
right.
say if you're going to eat an elephant, start with the tail. And no, I don't condone eating elephants.
Right.
But it is an example of what you need to do if you want to get there. And it's the same thing with business. It's like, you don't just go straight to the top and achieve the goal, like reverse engineer your success or the pattern that you want, all these different things, and then be prepared to be creative along the way, because you're guaranteed to add a whole lot of items to that list, because you don't know what you're doing until after you've done it most times, and you need to
yep.
be prepared to learn how to do other stuff along the way. I think the one thing that we've learned in 400 episodes of Startup Hustle is the plan always changes.
Yeah.
We love quoting Mike Tyson. Everyone had a plan until they got punched in the face.
Right.
So you got to be ready. And like that is a level of creativity and something that you need to consider on, you know, like a lot of different levels. So, you know, I mean, all important stuff. Now, before we get to the thrilling conclusion here on Startup Hustle, I do want to remind you that Tesseract Ventures is a sponsor of today's episode of Startup Hustle, and Tesseract has brought Silicon Valley innovation here to the Midwest, where I am located. And they enable businesses just like yours to defy the boundaries of space and time through next generation technologies. Visit TesseractVentures.io to learn more, or you can just click the link in the show notes. Now, speaking of links in the show notes, we got one for Nir. You can go to nirbashan.com. You can learn more about him. You can buy his book. By the way, I did just buy your book. So in
cool.
some ways, you got paid. You got paid to be on the show today.
Yes.
Congratulations.
62 cents. Yeah, buddy.
That's why I own my – that's why I don't use big publishers. For
right.
Book,
yeah, maybe. I noticed that. Do you have your own publishing wing?
We just, you know, with all of mine, we just did it. I hired an editor and we indied it.
Good,
you know?
Yeah.
And some of that, now that said, I get $7 a book.
Yeah, good for you.
But I also don't have the power of a major publisher promoting my shit. So
I had a really good experience at McGraw.
I will live the rest
man.
Of my life
they're
not
really
knowing if that was a good or a, yeah. 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 And that's, I just, I it's funny. People ask me a lot. They're like, you've had 3 books that were number one on Amazon. Do you make a lot of money selling books? I'm like, no, don't write a book. If your big plan is to write a book and get rich, it's not going to be from writing the book, probably. Like,
right,
it's
that,
just the
that's
way.
A good,
there, 1.4
good
million
advice.
New books come out every year. You are a drop of water in the ocean on that one. And that's piled upon all of history's literature. So yeah, there's a little bit of competition out there. If you've ever gone and given a pitch and the investor's like, you're in a crowded space here. Yeah. Then
right.
they could
that's
be talking
feeling.
About publishing.
Yeah.
Yeah. They could be talking about publishing as well. So, but that said, go buy Nir's book. Because, you know, here's the thing is
I want my 67 cents, please.
I'm curious. Yeah. Is this the first book you've written?
It's the first book, you know, and
how did that treat you? Like, what did you learn?
I learned a lot, you know, I learned that writing is part of the experience, but it's really learning to work with an editor and taking out stuff that isn't critical. I got really lucky. The editor that I worked with there, Cheryl Segura, is like kind of a genius. And so she was able to distill the book into really actionable items, short, really good and bite-sized, highlightable, you know, dog-eared page type of an experience. And so, yeah, I learned a lot. I will do things a little bit differently on the next book so that maybe I can make, you know, 72 cents a copy.
It'll come
high
out
aspirations.
Faster. You'll write, if you write another one. So I wrote two almost in parallel to each other. And
okay.
I hired a guy named Patrick Price, and Patrick had been the editor on a dozen New York Times bestsellers. And
oh wow,
you know, the things, he was also the guy that discovered he's just not that into you. That was kind of a big one.
Yeah.
And you know, just like a several hundred million dollar franchise. Now that said, a lot of the things you mentioned, Patrick really instilled in me, and like, well, for regular listeners, you've heard me say lead with a need. That's straight out of his mouth. I mean, that was like, he said that so many different times, but what you mentioned, I think, is important when it comes to creativity and presentation, as well as sometimes creative people get a little blah, 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 blah,
totally.
You know, and it's like, for him, he's like, hey, look, you got to make these short small,
sweet,
bite-sized pieces. Keep it moving, because the longer you stay on one thing, the longer that block is, the higher your probability is that you're going to lose someone's interest. Now, that said, if you're going to go deep on a subject or a topic, then you better pick and choose your battles, basically.
Definitely.
So, yeah, and it was fun. You know, one of the things, for those aspiring authors, the one thing I learned from book one to book two was just like, do not look in the rearview mirror. Just like, get it all out. So the first book, I tried to polish it too much. The second book, I sent an apology note to Patrick when I sent him the first draft. I was like, I did not look in the rearview mirror at any of this. And I am sorry, and thank you. You know, but that was the thing is you don't have to be an excellent writer to write a great book. You need an excellent editor.
Yes.
And you do have to have some ideas. So yeah, I'm good. That was interesting that worked out the same for you. Now we end episodes of Startup Hustle with what we call the founder's freestyle. And I'm going to give the mic to you here momentarily, because I would like to hear a little bit of your freestyle advice for the founders and entrepreneurs of the world. I mean, it's your freestyle, so you do it however you want. And if you want to spin it around creativity, that would make sense too, but it's up to you. So here you go.
So freestyle would be this. I think that what would really help people is understanding, like we were talking about earlier, Matt, that we're all born creative, and that creativity is deeply ingrained in our DNA. It is who we are. And when we are constantly looking for market differentiation, we're constantly looking to stand out, right? And we're trying to figure out, okay, you know, what would stand out my product or service and software than the next guy? It's time to look within, right? And it's not time to spend a lot of money, and it's not time to buy a new piece of machinery, which is distraction from the goals that we love to do, because, you know, we feel like those things will bring in a return on investment. They sometimes do, but they won't in the long term. What you need to do is really look within and listen to that voice telling you who you are, and start solving problems in your business with a different mindset. And that will open up opportunities that are unbelievably lucrative if you just allow it to do so. You got to get out of your own way in a way, Matt. And the no BS approach is that you just got to quiet down the self-doubt. I have some techniques in the book on how to do that, but you find that self-doubt has destroyed more greatness for society than anything else. Like, we could have cured cancer by now. We could have had a woman on Mars easily by now. But, you know, that engineer or that doctor or researcher working on those cures had some self-doubt. I can't base my reputation on this idea. It's too out there, too wacky, too crazy. And then who suffers? We all do, Matt. So if your listeners take one thing, right, out of the entire podcast, I hope it's that you're born creative. Your creativity is your DNA. It's literally your brand, your stamp onto the world of your product or service. Get out of your own way and get to it. It's not about, you know, philosophy. It's about doing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on everything you said. And, you know, there's a few things I'm going to parlay off of here. And, you know, look, being creative in a business doesn't always mean like this massive rocket that's taking off to Mars. It's often about just like, hey, being creative can come in so many shapes and forms.
Yep.
And you don't have to revolutionize something to be fucking creative, people. I'll give you an example, the Full Scale blog. So we publish, if you haven't visited, go check it out, fullscale.io. We publish an article every weekday or most weekdays about entrepreneur stuff. And, you know, for example, we just got a little bit more creative with the way we were interacting with the people on those pages, because a lot of them wanted help. So we created a new type of interactive form that we put on there that kept the visitor on the page, and it asked useful questions and gave useful answers. Now, that said, overnight, our quote lead gen went up 400%, and it looks like it's staying there. And, you know, the thing was, is that just required a little bit of creativity. Now, here's the thing, is that little tiny slice of creativity, does that have a possibility of having a massive impact on my business? If lead gen's up 400%, I don't see how it couldn't. So, you know, but it did take a little bit of creativity. I had to go look for something, because I'll give you an example. Like, if someone they visit a blog article, they might not even know what you do. They leave the page, whatever. You're wanting them to go to another page, and then find a contact form. Like,
right.
Why not just keep them there? And you ask useful questions that say, hey, do you want us to send you suggestions for what your software team could look like?
Right.
As a matter of fact, I would really enjoy that.
Yes.
So it's, you know, but the thing is I just had to go out, and it took me a little bit to find exactly what we needed or wanted. And then honestly, it took me longer to customize it than it did to find it.
Right.
And I had to be creative, and it was about like making it convenient and useful and meaningful and stuff like that. Now, that said, I'm not going to probably list that as one of the 10 most creative things that I will do this year at the end of the year, but I might look back at it and say that it became the most impactful. So you never know. The funny thing was, is I found that solution while trying to address something completely different. So you got to keep your mind open for creativity. Now, here's the thing is once I was looking for a way to actually for this podcast, I was looking for a way to embed something on a page that did a better job of bringing in potential guests. Because we get, I don't know, 3 or 4 people a day fill out a contact form, and it's just we wanted it to be a little more interesting. And all of a sudden I was like, shit, this should be somewhere else. Now at that point, I realized I might be onto something. I tabled the other stuff, went over, spun this other plate. Now that said, like, that's what creativity is, people. It's about keeping your eyes, your ears, and your mind open to where the things you see could be useful, where you could change something. You know, a lot of stuff with modern creativity and business is related to efficiency. Where can you remove a step? Where can you just get rid of something that you were doing altogether? The most efficient decision you can make with efficiency planning is to stop doing something altogether.
Right.
Like, that is a 100% improvement on time right there. And that's the thing, is that is sometimes creative. And much like you mentioned during the episode, that can throw a jolt into some, what do you mean we're not going to do that anymore?
Right.
Yeah, we're not going to do it anymore. Well, why? That prevents a 0.1% loss of revenue. But we're spending 1% of our revenue and labor doing that. It's 10 times more expensive for us to keep doing it.
Leave no stone unturned.
Creative. Yeah.
I did a keynote with a disaster restoration group in January or December. I can't remember.
Those people have to be creative a lot.
Dude. Yeah. I mean, talk about an industry that it's not. A guy was on
But their solution is, a lot of times you get there and you're like, oh my God, how is there a volcano erupting from your basement floor? And they're like, yeah, I don't know. It just, it just really started spitting lava up. Can you suck it up? Can you do that? Well, it's not really what the machine's made for, but I think we can get creative.
Yeah, definitely, man. It's crazy. And so a guy came up after and was like, oh, yeah, I was checking my email the whole time. Or no, he was like, oh, I had to email people and All I was thinking while you were talking was that you took an hour out of my productivity, out of my efficiency by talking. And I'm like, I like you. You're my kind of dude. So we started talking. He signs up for like the basic sort of, you know, the cheapest consulting agreement with me, just a few hours or whatever. And the first thing we'd start working on is, you know, he's like, okay, show me how I can be more creative. What do I need? A new website? I'm like, dude, were you not listening to the lecture? He's like, no, I told you that already. I'm like, okay. So we start looking at his sales pipeline because people generally want to see like ROI instantly. You're creative. We're paying you. Give us ROI, you know? So we started looking into sales and it turned out that his invoices, you know, were his proposals, excuse me, were, you know, written like a lawyer. They were like 17 pages long. I'm like, let's take this all out. Let's write three paragraphs and let's write a story. And then he was like, we've never done that. Why would we do that? Things are working. I'm like, how are they working? He's like, I'm converting 9%. I'm like, okay, how is that? He's like, industry standard. I'm like, are you happy with that? He's like, absolutely not. I want to go to like 11% of close, you know, that would be way better and I would make more money. I'm like, great, let's get creative. So he was like, no, we can't. My uncle, you know, the founder of the company 30 years ago. Ah. And I said, okay, let's just change it and let's send it out to 10 people. And of course, you know, 8 out of the 10 people were like, cool. Now the proposal is a story. Mary burned the turkey on Thanksgiving. You know, that was like the first sentence of it. And people started buying it. I'm like, let's look at your billing model. He's like, that is nothing we are ever going to touch. No, no, no. You know, I was like, okay, cool. Let's get creative. And, you know, let's do it for a small population. It's like, what do you want to do? I'm like, let's go a la carte. Why are all disaster restorations services charging lump sum? Listen, dude, I did a talk for software people. This might be accurate for you, Matt. And I told them that most people in the software industry create a product that nobody needs, but they've convinced themselves that like, oh, I'm going to create something and everybody's going to save the world. But like literally nobody wants it. Okay. And so this is a similar case where he thought that if you deviate from lump sum, nobody would want it. But it turned out that when we did his invoicing a la carte, more people signed up. That is a creative idea. And yes, people did sign up for the cheaper package, but overall, because he had good service and people enjoyed the experience, they ended up signing up for the whole thing, which made him something like 22% more per customer, right? It's time to get creative, people. It's like, this isn't about playing a trumpet or whatever, even though that's awesome. And if you're into that, then that's great. But what I am advocating is for you to leave no rock unturned in your business, Matt, and your listeners, leave no rock unturned. If it's just tweaking the input form on the website just a little bit to get, you know, a 400% sign up boost, then that's really, really important. But it's not about just things that you can do. It's also about things that you're not doing. What are you in your business today not looking at that could benefit from a spend of some time and creativity on in order to maximize its potential? I think it's right there for the taking. You need to look the entire pipeline of your business and start to inject, leave no rock unturned, inject creativity at every single turn. And where something might get you a 0.5% gain here or a 1.1% gain there, stuff starts adding up. And pretty soon you got a very nimble, effective machine.
And that's Nir Bashan, everyone, the author of The Creator Mindset. You can learn more about Nir Bashan by clicking the link in the show notes. Now, look, dude, I'm all fired up. I want to go do some creative shit. I want to make some money.
All right.
I'm going to see you next time.
For sure, man. I'd love to be back.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.